The time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Ukraine is denying it shipped defense technology to North Korea. That denial came after the New York Times reported the North may have purchased rocket engines from a Ukrainian factory through the black market. U.S. spokesperson Heather Nauert, referring to the North as the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, or DPRK, was asked about the report Tuesday.
That's an issue that we would take very seriously if that were to be the case. There have been a lot of U.N. Security Council resolutions, and they obligate all nations, including Ukraine, to prevent transfers of sensitive technology to the DPRK.
The report comes amid growing concerns about the rapid development of the North's missile program, including tests last month of intercontinental ballistic missiles. Bruce Bennett is a defense analyst with the RAND Corporation.
Well, I think we probably still have some information to figure out, but if the North Koreans have figured out how to make the engines, the Ukrainians almost certainly helped them. They're the ones who were producing the engine of the size and character that we believe North Korea's used from the evidence that's available.
Reuters quotes a U.S. intelligence official as suggesting North Korea is not reliant on imports of engines but has the ability to produce them themselves. Another official said modifications to the engine to improve reliability may have involved recruited foreign scientists or North Koreans educated outside the country. Meanwhile, Russia and China have called for talks between Washington and Pyongyang over tensions. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said the U.S. is open to discussion.
We continue to be interested in finding a way to get to dialogue, but that's up to him.
A reference to the North Korean leader, Kim Jong-un, his spokesperson, Heather Nauert, said the North first has to take serious steps, including denuclearization. This is VOA News. Nearly 30 people were killed, dozens wounded Tuesday by explosives detonated by suicide bombers at a marketplace in the northeast Nigerian village of Mandarari near the city Maiduguri and a nearby refugee camp. Although there was no immediate claim of responsibility, the attacks bear the hallmarks of the Boko Haram insurgency. Rescue workers in Sierra Leone recovered more than 300 bodies following mudslides caused by heavy rains in and near the capital Freetown. John James is a spokesman for the UN Children's Fund UNICEF in the country.
In the worst case, there was a landslide which took away a whole section of the hill, just taking homes and families with it as well. So there's just been hundreds of bodies coming out of the dirt, and I think we're still seeing those numbers rise as time goes on.
Dozens of homes were buried when a mountainside collapsed in the town of Regent Monday in one of the deadliest natural disasters in Africa in recent years. President Ernest Bai Koroma urged residents to evacuate so military personnel and other rescue workers can search for survivors who might still be buried under mud and debris. The U.S. Tuesday accused Islamic State insurgents of carrying out a reign of violence targeting religious minorities and opposition ethnic groups, even as they have been losing control of large parts of territory in Iraq and Syria. Secretary of State Tillerson said Islamic State is clearly responsible for genocide and crimes against humanity.
ISIS is clearly responsible for genocide against Yazidis, Christians, and Shia Muslims in areas it controls or has controlled. ISIS is also responsible for crimes against humanity and ethnic cleansing directed at these same groups, and in some cases against Sunni Muslims, Kurds, and other minorities.
Tillerson also singled out seven countries for an array of abuses in the way their governments treat religious minorities, including Iran, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Bahrain, China, Pakistan, and Sudan, through harassment, imprisonment, and execution. Mali Tuesday called on the international community to provide military and financial aid for supporting a multinational force to combat jihadism in Africa's Sahel region. Mali's U.N. ambassador told the Security Council Monday's attacks in Mali that left 9 dead and Sunday's attacks in a restaurant in Burkina Faso in which 18 were killed underscored the need for such a force. The Taliban, in an open letter to President Donald Trump, warned the security situation is far worse in the country than he realizes and called on U.S. forces to be withdrawn. Some 8,400 U.S. troops are currently in the country. The Trump administration is preparing a new military strategy for Afghanistan. The International Criminal Court in The Hague Tuesday issued an arrest warrant for alleged war crimes for a Libyan National Army commander accused of executing dozens of prisoners. The ICC seeking the arrest of Mohamed El-Wafali after the LLA captured Benghazi. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, August 16th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leone declares 7 days of mourning as the number of dead from Monday's flooding and mudslide rises.
It was confirmed as of yesterday that 297 corpses have been deposited at the morgue. Already, President Nkrumah has instructed a 7 day mourning period.
Abdoulaye Birete is spokesman for Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma. The treason trial of Zambian opposition leader Hichilema resumes today, Wednesday. There's still no word on a possible challenge to Kenya's presidential election results, and six candidates in Liberia's 2017 presidential election prepare to debate tomorrow, Thursday.
Most times we have elections in Liberia, and it's more about the personalities than it's about the issue. And we in these organizations have decided that that is not a right way to go. So we decided to push the elections into more issues-focused discussions.
Lamin Bagoyo is the member of the Deepening Democracy Coalition, the group hosting Thursday's presidential debate. South Sudanese civil society groups want all groups who signed the 2015 Peace Accord to participate in its revitalization. And type 2 diabetes is becoming a public health issue in Africa. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma has declared 7 days of national mourning for the victims of Monday's flooding and mudslide in the capital of Freetown, beginning today, Wednesday. The president has also raised the national security threat to level 3 in response to the crisis. Meanwhile, there are conflicting accounts of the number of deaths from the tragedy. One account said as many as 400 bodies have been recovered, and the number is expected to rise. Abdoulaye Birete, spokesman for President Ernest Bai Koroma, says 297 corpses have been recovered so far.
His Excellency the President took a tour of the affected areas. Yesterday, we had a meeting from the Office of National Security because we have established various pillars with the international community and partners as well, whereby it was confirmed as of yesterday that 297 corpses have been deposited at the morgue. The president has raised the level of emergency to a level 3 based on the enormity of the problem. And so far, the rescue and recovery continues in the affected areas, especially at a community called the Sugarloaf Community, whereby a whole community was swept away by mudslide. It is very devastating. The good news, though, is the international community is responding.
Can we say, Mr. Birete, that the number of dead could probably rise beyond what you just said?
Yes, I can say that, because up to the point when we were having the figures from the Office of National Security by way of update, we still had reports of bodies being conveyed to the main Connaught Hospital mortuary. We are still, though, very optimistic that hopefully we'll be able to also get survivors. So far, though, the entire country is in trauma. We have deployed social workers across the country, particularly in the affected areas.
This tragedy is reminiscent of the Ebola days in Sierra Leone and Liberia, with so many people dying at the same time. Do you give the bodies back to the families, or does the government carry out mass burials?
Well, we have put out a press release this morning as I'm speaking to you now. Families have been invited to the main government hospital and the mortuary so that they can identify their loved ones. Want to give them that opportunity to give the last respect. But already President Koroma has instructed a 7 day mourning period whereby all our flags, both locally and internationally in our diplomatic missions, will be flown half-mast. And also we are going to conduct a huge memorial service for all the victims at the main national stadium. So in the event that bereaved families who identify their loved ones, we want to give them the opportunity if they wanted to give them a burial. If not, government is still going to support them, and we can still do the burial, a dignified one for that matter, involving the family, of course.
It is kind of difficult to do Monday morning quarterbacking at this time, but there are people, I know many Sierra Leonean friends who say this tragedy was the tragedy waiting to happen. because of the way buildings are constructed and situated in Sierra Leone. I mean, is there a lesson after this tragedy that the government can learn from in terms of zoning of a city?
It is unfortunate that we have to say that, because the policy of government is at this very devastating and trying period for the families. We don't want to cast any blame or aspersion. But you are right by saying, yes, this is a wake-up call. It is better that we take that carrot and the stick approach.
Mr. Birute, thank you very much for bringing us up to date on the tragedy in your country. So nice to have you on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you very much, sir, for the opportunity.
Abdoulaye Birute, spokesman for Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Liberia is bracing for the first presidential debate to be held in the capital, Monrovia. 6 of the 17 candidates in the October 10 presidential election have been invited to explain how they will each deal with 6 key areas of concern to the public if they were elected president. The areas are the economy, security and rule of law, peace and reconciliation, anti-corruption policy, agriculture, and youth empowerment. Lamin Bagoyo is a member of the Deepening Democracy Coalition, the group that is organizing Thursday's presidential debate. He says the purpose is to make the candidates discuss issues rather than their personalities.
Most times we have elections in Liberia, and it's more about the personalities than it's about the issue. Even quite recently, it has become more about the tribal linkages of people. And we in these organizations have decided that that is not the right way to go. So we decided to push the elections into more issues-focused discussions.
Have you been able to get consent from the candidates that they will attend this debate?
Over the past 8 to 6 weeks, we have been holding consultations with the different political players. Initially, we sent out letters and had discussions with political parties across the spectrum. And then we narrowed that down to candidates that applied and political parties that applied to participate in the presidential elections. And after we did an opinion poll quite recently, we narrowed that down to 6 candidates. And at every stage, all the political parties that we interacted with, including these 6, have indicated to us that they will be participating in the debate.
You said you narrowed the list down to 6 candidates. I was wondering, how did you come to that conclusion to narrow it down to 6 candidates? My understanding is that about 20 presidential parties or candidates are in this election.
I think currently there are like 17 of them that have been certified to contest. So what we did was that because we realized you cannot have 17 candidates on a debate stage and not be an effective debate, and it will last all day, and the general public will lose interest in it. We commissioned opinion pool ourselves. We commissioned an opinion pool. We also look at all the opinion pools that have been done. And from those opinion pools, we're able to narrow people to these 6 that we have invited to participate. And those 6 people are the current vice president, who is running on the ticket of the Unity Party. We also have Mr. George Weah, who is also a senator representing the Coalition for Democratic Change, Mr. Charles Bromsky of the Liberty Party, Mr. Alex Cummings of the Alternative National Congress, Mr. Benina Uro of the All Liberian Party, and Mr. J. Mills Jones of the Movement for Economic Empowerment.
So you said that according to your group, the candidates will be asked to talk about their plans or their platforms for key areas, including what? The economy, security and rule of law, and also peace and reconciliation, anti-corruption policy, agriculture and youth empowerment. How did you come to choose these particular topics?
As part of our opinion pools, also, we ask people, in the opinion pools that we commission, we did not only ask people who they are going to be voting for, we also ask them what they are interested in. So these are the things that they narrow down to, because most people in the country seem to be interested in these particular thematic issues. That's the reason why we chose those particular ones for this first debate.
Is there any woman presidential candidate in this election cycle, and why is it that she was not invited?
There is at least one female candidate in the election, but As I said, the opinion put out a commission. The female candidate that currently is in the election did not fall within the top six candidates as the opinion poll found, so we could not invite her to participate in the debate.
Lamin Bagoyo is a member of the Deepening Democracy Coalition, the group that is organizing Thursday's presidential debate in Liberia. You're speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Today is Wednesday, August 16th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is 15 and a half minutes past the hour. It's been 4 days since Kenya's political opposition rejected the results of the country's presidential election. Now, Kenyans are waiting to see how opposition leader Raila Odinga and his allies will follow up on their accusations that the election was rigged. From Nairobi, viewer Jill Craig has more.
Kenyans continue to wait in suspense for a statement by opposition leader Raila Odinga. Odinga was scheduled to announce his next move Tuesday. However, the NASA Opposition Coalition released a statement postponing his remarks to Wednesday, given what it called the urgency, complexity, and delicate nature of the issues being considered. The Electoral Commission announced on August 11th that incumbent Uhuru Kenyatta had won the election with 54.3% of the vote, beating Odinga's 44.8%. Odinga has rejected the results, asserting that the voting system was hacked. The opposition has rejected calls to challenge the poll results in court. The White House released a statement Tuesday congratulating Kenyatta on his re-election and said it welcomed the statements by international and domestic observer missions affirming the credibility of the election. It also called on Kenyans to reject violence and resolve disputes in accordance with the Kenyan constitution and the rule of law. The Kenya Human Rights Commission said Saturday that 24 people had lost their lives since the day following the election as a result of police using live bullets. Police dispute that figure, saying 10 people have been killed, and all of them criminals. Meanwhile, the Kenya Human Rights Commission, or KHRC, says it is being targeted for closure by the state regulator, the NGO Coordination Board. A letter from the board to KHRC released online Monday accuses the KHRC of employing foreigners without work permits, making secret payments to board members, failing to pay taxes, and having illegal bank accounts. KHRC says that NGO Coordination Board Director Fazul Mohammed has banned NGOs affiliated with the opposition and has refused to meet with the KHRC about the accusations against the group. KHRC Executive Director George Kegoro spoke to reporters Tuesday.
Now, the third issue is around the veracity of the letter. Mohammed Fazul only attacks us in the media. He never writes to us. He has never written to us a single letter. We see these documents flying in the media and never directed to us.
Amnesty International says the NGO Coordination Board is also asking authorities to close down another local rights group, the African Center for Open Governance. The group is accused of operating without proper registration as an NGO. In a statement, Amnesty International said the NGO Coordination Board is seeking to discredit human rights organizations, calling the moves unlawful and irresponsible. VOA was unsuccessful in its attempts to get comment from the NGO Coordination Board. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
The treason trial of Zambian opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema resumes today, Wednesday. Mr. Hichilema of the main opposition United Party for National Development, UPND, pleaded not guilty Monday to treason charges for failing to make way for President Edgar Lungu's motorcade. Today's court appearance comes as there are rumors that the government is planning to drop the charges if Mr. Hichilema would recognize President Lungu as the legitimate president of the country. Charles Kakoma is spokesman for the UPND party.
So what can you tell us, is Mr. Hichilema, we hear, is he coming to court today, Wednesday?
Yes, Mr. Hakainde Hichilema, the opposition leader in Zambia, is coming to court on Wednesday for a treason trial. He had earlier on appeared for plea on Monday, and it was adjourned to Wednesday for trial.
But, Mr. Kakoma, this is coming amid reports that Mr. Hichilema might soon be released. How true is that?
Well, there's a wide speculation on social media that is expected to be released, but we have not yet received any official communication from the government that that's their plan. So it remains social media speculation. In the past 1 week or so, of course, we saw world leaders like the Commonwealth Secretary General, Patricia Scotland, coming to Zambia to try to broker a peace deal. But no details of that deal have been made public.
Talking about the Commonwealth Secretary General, there were reports that Mr. Hichilema was going to be released on condition that he will recognize the results of the election.
Well, again, there was no direct decision or public announcement to that effect, but people were just insinuating from the statement that she made at the press conference that the two leaders had agreed to forget the past. So people were interpreting what that would mean.
Mr. Kakoma, let me get your comment. I wonder if you have heard this, that President Edgar Lungu on Tuesday announced that or launched a campaign to promote HIV testing in Zambia. Did you hear that? And what do you think about that?
Well, yeah, I heard that. And in the Zambian media, it is all over. They are talking about it, and it's breaking news. But, of course, for those of us in Zambia that have been following the health issues, it's not really a new development. In the past 10 years, there has been compulsory testing for HIV and AIDS in hospitals, starting with those that have been going for maternity. So the women and children that have been born or have been pregnant in the last 10 years have been subjected to compulsory HIV testing. So what really this means is that now it's going to be extended to men.
The president said that the policy, which is going to be a government policy, is in response to what he called his government's agenda to end HIV by 2030.
Well, of course, there have been protests or criticisms from human rights organizations as well as lawyers that this is a violation of individual people's rights to privacy.
Charles Kakoma is spokesman for Zambia's main opposition UPND party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. South Sudanese civil society activists and academics are calling on the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, also known as IGAD, to ensure that all warring parties, including armed groups that emerged after the 2015 peace deal was signed, to take part in the agreement's revitalization. Nabil Biagio reports from Juba.
A coalition of civil society organizations and academics called the Voluntary Civil Society Task Force briefed representatives of IGAD, JMAC, the United Nations Mission in South Sudan, and other diplomats on the findings of an assessment they conducted on the status of implementing the peace agreement. Moses Monday, executive director of the Organization for Nonviolence and Development and a task force member, says, for the most part, the 2015 peace deal has not been implemented.
Based on the report findings, the transitional period for the implementation of the peace agreement is almost at hand, you know, is next year. Yet about 70% of the provisions of the peace agreement, which is supposed to be implemented within the given timeline, has not been implemented.
Monday says the agreement on the resolution of the conflict in South Sudan has failed to stop the war.
The agreement did not succeed to stop violence nor restore peace and stability in the country. And it has not even impacted positively in the lives of the common South Sudanese.
Rajab Muhandis, executive director of the South Sudanese Network for Democracy and Elections, says all South Sudanese must take part in the revitalization forum proposed by IGAD. And IGAD must take a tough stance this time around on holding the warring parties responsible for breaking the agreement.
These numerous groups that are at conflict should all be involved to ensure that we leave nobody out and we contribute comprehensively to peace in the country. The second recommendation is that the mediators, IGAD particularly, and also JMEC, should take up their responsibilities seriously and impartially to support the implementation process. And also, in a way, they should be able to bring to bear consequences on parties that continue to violate the provisions of the peace agreement.
Muhandis says some IGAD member countries have demonstrated a double standard in the way they fail to enforce the agreement.
Some member countries of IGAD contributed directly to destabilization
by facilitating flow of arms to the parties in the conflict in the country.
Abdurrahim Khalil, head of IGAD's liaison office in Juba, says despite accusations that the South Sudan government is still importing weapons from some IGAD countries, IGAD is committed to bringing peace to South Sudan.
Because of this interaction between the countries and the long and porous borders, movements of people which is not organized, you can say a lot of things about the relations of these countries. But at the governmental level, the governments are trying to do their best in order to help to bring this problem to a solution.
Khalil says IGAD has initiated the revitalization process because it realizes the peace deal is not being implemented. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
The number of people with diabetes in Africa rose by 129% from 1980 to 2014. A group of experts convened in 2014 has recently released their findings about how type 2 diabetes, which is associated with adult obesity, is a public health problem in the region. Justine Davis, a global health professor at King's College in London, who was part of the group researching the issue, spoke to Ricky Stryak about causes and ways to fight the disease.
Sub-Saharan Africa is going through a rapid socioeconomic transition. So even though Sub-Saharan Africa is very poor, it's still getting richer. So it's relatively poor, but it's relatively richer than countries were in the region before, which means that people are able to spend more money and on food. They are able to use cars more than whereas they used to walk. So all of these things impact on obesity and overweight, which also affect diabetes.
Here in West Africa, it's been my anecdotal observance that it seems to especially affect women. Can you tell me a little bit, is that the case?
In general, diabetes will affect men and women equally. The thing that you're seeing in Senegal, and we may be seeing across the whole of Sub-Saharan Africa, but we don't know because nobody's actually got a lot of good data on this, is that if you look around at the people, quite a lot of the men are doing hard physical work, especially if this is people in the cities. Quite a lot of men are still doing hard physical work, but the women are perhaps more sedentary and often overweight. The men aren't so overweight, but women are overweight. And it's a thing, a cultural thing in Africa, that being overweight, especially in women, has been celebrated and encouraged. So that might be, as I've said, we don't know for sure, but that might be one of the reasons why in some areas women have more diabetes than men, because in some areas women are more overweight than men.
When you say that the health system is ill-equipped, can you give me some details?
So in 2001, all the heads of state, most of the African nations, met in Abuja, and they declared to spend, it was at least 15% of their national annual budgets on health. However, in 2013, there was only 7 countries in the entire Sub-Saharan Africa that had met that target. There was another declaration from Eden Hat in London, which was to spend 5% of total GDP on health. And most countries haven't yet achieved that either.
Justine Davis is a global health professor at King's College in London. She was speaking to Ricky Strike from South Africa. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma has declared 7 days of national mourning for the victims of Monday's flooding and mudslide in the capital, Freetown. And that is it for this Wednesday, August 16th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer James Harmon, I'm James Butte saying, have a lovely day, Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, troubling times in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The United States says it's concerned at the inability of both the DRC government and an opposition coalition to implement a political transition agreement reached last December. A DRC political discussion.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.